Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
My beard looks patently ridiculous.
Oh, great. I believe you.
You know what I mean? Like, I dyed it this morning because I, like, it's getting kind of gray, so I dyed it, but I went a little too dark, and then I don't know.
It looks very nicely salt and pepper.
All right. I'll take a compliment, even though it's like pulling teeth sometimes.
I said salt and pepper, so okay. I just said
push it real good.
Sorry.
I guess we're done.
It just felt like...
like, just one verse.
Yeah.
Hi, Julia Bezzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. How is it going with you?
It's good. Am I not allowed to ask you how
you
are?
No, it's good. It just got real formal.
I threw you off.
A little bit.
Fam, can you please join our Facebook group? We've got about 52,000 members in there.
Yeah.
It's real fun. It's like a place where you come to meet friends. You talk about the episodes. You share memes. You tell us about your dogs. You tell us about your graduations and your weddings. It's really
it's
a great
everything.
Place.
It ticks a lot of boxes.
It's also where, like, you find out about stuff. Like, I'm doing this meetup tour this summer. We recently did our one in New York City.
It was so fun.
I'm coming to a bunch of cities near you. It's pinned in the Facebook group. All you got to do is RSVP. Totally free. You pay for your own drinks. But then we, like, hang out. You make new friends. Everybody has a really good time. You have fun.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
It's a good time.
Yeah, it's a great time.
Drinks had by all.
Yeah.
I was drinking soda and cranberry juice that night. Were you proud of me?
Yeah, because you knew you'd get in trouble because we had so much to do the next
day.
And
my voice was a wreck.
And we couldn't not do it.
I know.
I was like,
I know. I'm like, well, Jillian's going to be at this one. I got to be at my best behaves.
I had like a glass of wine.
I know.
So sue me.
We were so good.
Yeah.
What are we talking about today?
All right. So hi, welcome to the bonus episodes.
Yes.
This is an episode of that show, Web of Death. Great show, terrible name.
Yeah.
This is the second episode. It's called The Boulder Jane Doe, but I'm renaming it. It's The Murder of Dorothy Gay Howard.
Right here is the crime scene where Boulder Jane Doe was found.
They realized that this was the body of a slender young woman. She was completely naked and had been battered and bruised and bludgeoned.
Not only were there no clues as to who killed her, there were no clues as to who she was.
Please give me back my name. No one knows who I am or how I came to die.
Jane Doe was someone's daughter. And I thought, who is this girl? Well, I'll try to figure out who she is.
One of the researchers realized that there had been a serial killer in the Boulder area about the right time.
She says he lived in Denver. And all of a sudden it went, oh my gosh.
Finding out what happened, my entire family was just in a state of shock.
I love her because her middle name is Gay.
And Dorothy. Double gay.
Like, see, this is how I know you're a 65-year-old gay man reincarnated, because I didn't even put the Dorothy part together.
Oh, woof. Give me the card.
I know.
Give me it.
I'm pretty gay in all the other ways.
I don't know about that. You missed the Dorothy reference.
And I did go whitewater rafting once.
That's true.
I went outside one time this summer.
Lots of gays like outside stuff.
I guess that's true.
That's true.
I met a lot of them.
Yeah.
So the first person we meet here is Sylvia Petham. And what I love about her, and I love when documentaries do this, we get the before they start rolling moment where, like, she's sitting in the chair. She doesn't know what to do with her arms.
And I'm like, girl, same.
I love her.
I don't know what to do with my
arms. You always look great. Whenever we do one of these things, and I, like, one time I walked in because my shot was after yours, you're in interview was first.
Okay.
And I was looking at the monitor. I was watching them film you. You look like a mil bazil.
Oh, thanks.
You look so good on camera.
Oh my God. Thanks.
You really do. It's the skin routine. It's the hair is popping. It's the whole thing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I did wear my Hex the Patriarchy shirt today because this episode is so let the women do the work.
I know.
It's amazing.
It's very let the women heavy.
So we love Sylvia.
Yes.
She moved to Boulder for college and never left. She's been there 50 years. She loves it.
And I gotta tell you, Boulder looks gorgeous.
It's great. It looks beautiful.
It really looks beautiful.
Yeah.
She loved it, never wanted to leave. And we learn.
Once or twice a year, the Historical Society in Boulder held what was called Meet the Spirits.
Amateur actors recount the lives of the people buried here.
People like me would dress up as characters of people buried in the cemetery.
Where people like Sylvia would dress up like people in the cemetery and tell their stories.
Yeah, it's really no different than, like, the Civil War reenactments.
Except it's cooler? I don't know.
It's spookier and witchier, I guess. But yeah, it's October 5th, 1996.
Yes.
We're at the Meet the Spirits event.
I love that Sylvia loves Boulder so much. She's like, I'm going to do that thing where we dress up like the people in the cemetery. Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and I get the sense, it's not like, ooh, spooky. I get the sense that it's very respectful because this is the catalyst for why we're here telling the story today.
They do have to provide their own costumes, which I was like, is there no budget?
No, that's fun. Then you get to like thrift your costume and go to an old store and be like,
Yeah.
So we meet Mary Riley McNellan, and she is a former Columbia Cemetery preservation manager.
Yeah.
And she tells us there's one Jane Doe in the cemetery.
Yes.
And the tombstone says, Jane Doe, April 1954, age about 20 years.
Like, this reenactment where they're telling this Jane Doe story was in 1996. Like, that's a lot of years that this Jane Doe has been there. It's 1954. Yeah. And people in Denver know about this. I was talking to some people in Denver. They know about what I'm saying. People in Colorado know the Boulder Jane Doe.
Okay.
This is like a known thing.
Okay.
So like it's, you know, it's a known story, but like she's been there a long time unidentified. It's time to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. And the actress or the person who's portraying her at this event says,
please give me back my name. No one knows who I am or how I came to die. Battered, beaten, and naked on the rocky edge of Boulder Creek. My murderer, whoever he was brutal and vicious. I was too young to die. Can someone tell me who I am and return my remains to my family?
Can someone tell me who I am and return my remains to my family?
I mean, it's like literally calling from the grave.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so this obviously like really struck our friend Sylvia and Mary. They're like, wait, we should... Like, Sylvia's like... All right, well, I'll figure out who she is. And I'm like, all right, Syl, let's do it.
Well, because Sylvia's saying, like, this woman was about 20 years old. She said, as a mom, that really hit me because her kids at the time were, like, 19 and 23. So, of course, it's like, speaking to her, like, this could be her own daughter.
Yeah.
You know?
And Sylvia tells us that her main objective is to put the real name on this grave so she wasn't Jane Doe anymore. And I'm like, I have a feeling Sylvia's going to embark on a few side quests.
Of course.
As well, because Sylvia just can't help but get shit done.
She cannot. She does
she
it by accident,
it.
Almost.
She can't help it.
I know. She cannot
pure
help
of
it.
Heart. Sylvia.
But she does say, I had no idea what I was getting into. Like, this really does take a long time. And it's a lot of, like, and it's a lot of, like, different agencies and different kinds of people coming together and working together to solve this case, which I always love when that happens.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sylvia wrote for the history column for the Daily Camera.
Yes.
But she's at work and all she can think about is this case and this Jane Doe.
But she's also like trying to immerse herself in the era of the 1950s. So she's like watching it. Like she's really trying to get into it. She's watching
about thrift stores,
movies and like old magazines just to get a feel for what the time was like. But because she worked for the Daily Camera, the local paper, she's got access to their archives.
They had a whole drawer of murder files. At the very back under U, there was this unidentified file. And it was full of these newspaper clippings. And I just spread them all out on a table. It was like a big jigsaw puzzle and kind of fit them together. And that was the impetus that got me going.
She takes all those clippings out and puts them on a table and arranges them like a jigsaw puzzle.
Did that not get you so amped?
Well, it's
even
the kind
if I know
thing
it's
where
like,
it's
yes!
like, I know. It's like, it's the beginning. It's like the start of something, you know?
So our Jane Doe, her body was found by two students. They were hiking along Boulder Creek. I'm so sorry. We're going to have to pause here for a minute.
Yeah.
Do you remember the restaurant Boulder Creek? Do you remember that restaurant?
No.
It had like the onion blossom onion thing.
I thought that was, the Bloomin' Onion is from.
Right. Okay. Boulder Creek is like Applebee's, but the theme is like a lodge. It's like a
Really?
Chili's Applebee's thing, but it's like a wilderness lodge or like a saloon. It had steakhouse in the name. It is not a steakhouse.
Did they have this like in Queens where you were growing up?
Yeah. And they had like an enormous like fireplace. So instead of like a water feature because it was supposed to be like a cabin.
Oh my God.
The most amazing cheese fries with the sauce that I think about to this day.
Really?
Yeah. And when I tell, like this place was nothing special when I tell you I loved
it. Of course.
They had
Caesar
the best
salad
bread.
For days, I'm
sure. The coldest, but not too cold. And it was crispy and the dressing was perfect, but it wasn't wet because no one likes a soggy Caesar salad.
No, it's creamy.
Yeah.
It's not wet. It's creamy.
It's creamy. and yeah. it's like Caesar salad and the fries. Like, I know. Oh my God. And like,
wait, can we just
fries.
Stop and go right now? I'm starving.
I've looked it up. There's like not there. They've gone the way of the Rainforest Cafe. It's another place I obviously love very much. There's one in Vegas. And
oh
when Mike
God.
And I went,
I'll,
I was
right,
like,
I'll book us tickets
like,
right now.
We're going, because like, Mike and I have been to Vegas a few times. And I think the last time we went, I was like, Rainforest. And I don't think it's there anymore.
Oh my
but the
God.
The first time I went to Vegas, I was like, there's a rainforest. And you go in and it's like, it like sounds like the rainforest. We can move on.
Okay.
I hear myself now.
I'm with
off
you.
The rails are gone.
If
what
anyone
rails?
Knows
rails.
What insufferable sounds like, it's this gay right here. I know. Like, so I'm just saying, you've had to tolerate me. I'll go with you on this journey all day.
When you've had those cheese fries.
I know.
Get back to me. They're amazing.
So we learn about the Jane Doe a little bit. We learn the body that was found was a slender young woman, strawberry blonde hair. She was 17 to 20 years old, about 5'3" tall, about 100 pounds. She was completely naked, and they say she'd been battered, bruised, and bludgeoned. And she'd been there for like a week or more. So her body was kind of frozen.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to get an eye color or a fingerprint identification. So I guess the body was decomposed enough that they couldn't like get a fingerprint.
And in the 50s, like that equals no leads.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, literally, if you didn't see it and there wasn't a fingerprint, forget it. Just like slap it on the cold case file.
And there are many, many times you're going to be like, holy shit, I can't believe that happened. In this episode, here's one of them.
Yes.
So Freeburn L. James is the pathologist on the paperwork from the scene.
No, 1953 we're talking about. Yeah. 1953.
Sylvia gives this guy a goog.
Yeah.
There's only one Freeburn L. James in the entire country. She calls him up and is like, hey girl, are you that pathologist from Boulder? Do you know what he says? Do you know what he says?
What he literally says was,
I've always wondered about that girl. I have her autopsy report right here in my living room. It was like, wow.
I've got the file right here on my coffee table.
In my living room.
I know.
All I have is just like letters and numbers. My hands just went like this. I couldn't type words.
It's one of those things where like when people ask him at a cocktail party, what's the case that keeps you up at night this from your one. Time? This is the one. He's like, I got the file on my coffee table right now.
I think about
He's
it
He's like
the time.
Up late at night trying to solve it himself.
I mean, I can't believe it. Sylvia calls him up and he goes, I've been thinking about it every day.
I have the note right here that I said, sometimes it's just fucking time for a thing to get solved.
You know,
sometimes
true.
Like the universe just aligns. You know, it was like we just covered the Jacob Wetterling case in the Still Missing Morgan. And it was like, his mother was saying that, like, Jacob just knew it was time to be found.
And what you were saying about that actress, and we don't know her. She's not here. But from the time, like, the things she was saying, almost speaking for or just, like, calling out from the grave, like, that inspired Sylvia and Mary. And, like,
totally.
And now we're here.
Yeah.
So Sylvia and Freeburn are now working together. And we learn, this is very important.
Yes.
Jane Doe had an appendectomy scar.
Right. Because the pathologist that she called sends her a copy of the report. So she's going through it. And that appendectomy scar is very important. It's a, you know, it's one of the only identifying markers we have on her body.
Not taking away from anyone who's had an appendectomy. I have not, but every like week or two, I think I'm about to.
Oh, really?
Every time I have a stomach ache, I'm like, here it is. It's coming. She bursts.
I know.
She's had it.
I know. When I was like
she's
in college.
She's her hands up. She's done.
I know.
She's done.
I have no idea what your appendix do. Do you even need them?
I don't know.
I don't know either. What are the ones you need? Do you need the kidneys?
You definitely need your kidneys.
Okay. But only one because you can donate one.
Two is great.
Yeah. But you should donate one if you can.
If you can, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I think the spleen is totally meaningless. Sorry,
okay.
I'm sure it's not. I know. But the spleen is like, you can totally live without your spleen.
Yeah, you can.
I've heard.
Gallbladders can go, right? We don't need that.
No, I think you definitely
need
that.
Do you need your larynx?
Yeah, okay. You need it.
Okay. Oh, it makes the voice happen.
Yeah.
Okay, look what I learned.
There you go.
Okay, what else don't you need?
You need your liver.
You need your lungs. Yeah. I especially need my liver.
Without
my liver, I'm a little broken.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it all if that's okay.
For now, but when you die, you're going to give it all away.
Absolutely. It's already on my license.
You give it all the fuck away.
It's already on there. Okay, don't worry about it.
I know I was pointing at you, but I was really pointing at them.
Okay.
Everyone, when you die, give it away. It's not yours anymore.
Please, save a life.
My God.
You just like got on a soapbox. Okay.
I know. So Sylvia is like, all right, I've got enough information. It's time to call the cops. She calls the cops. She talks to Steve Ainsworth. He's here. He's amazing.
He's at a very cool billiard bar.
This guy is 65 years old. He looks like he's 40. He works out. Like, we see him at the gym at some point. And I'm like, when I'm your age, I really want to look like that.
Yeah.
I want to be in like that good physical shape when I am that man's age.
Great.
You know?
He loves Sylvia because he's like, let me tell you, Sylvia had her shit together right away.
When I first met with Sylvia, she had all of her ducks in a row. She had times, dates, who was involved. She had all of the newspaper clippings. She had all of this documentation on this homicide. Sylvia wanted to see if there was anything we could do to work this case up and see if we could maybe make some progress on it.
He's saying, I work cold cases, and like cold cases are really hard to do, but especially like one that's this old, but Sylvia's got everything we need. Like, let's fucking do this.
And so, like, here we go, right?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So Steve goes to the crime scene and he says, like, you have to go.
Yes.
You have to go to the crime scene. You can't, this, like, loving Sylvia and her paperwork, this isn't any shade at all. It's like two things are true at once. But he's like, I also have to be at the crime scene.
Because it's like, when I'm looking at reports or I'm you know, or taking reports or whatever, I have to be able to see it, smell it, hear it. I've got to, like, feel like I know the place.
Yeah. And we will learn later that is incredibly valuable.
Yes.
So it's 1954 and we're on a, what he calls a two-track dirt road.
Because we're at the crime scene. And now the crime scene, it looks like a major highway now, but back then it was just like a two-tracked road, he said. And he said it was a really desolate place, a perfect place for someone to kill somebody else and dump a body.
It's like,
and
I not hate be, to say it, but he's right.
Yeah, and it's, not be discovered.
And it's like gorgeous, but it's a perfect place for something horrible to happen.
It doesn't look like it now, but when we do see footage of it back then and you're like, yeah. Oh yeah, nobody would ever go there.
Yeah. So she was found on what they call like the creek bed.
Yes.
So it was really cold and that's why her body was somewhat frozen.
Yes.
But what's really interesting that Cold Case Steve points out, all of her injuries are on the left side of her body. So
right.
From her cranium down to her shins, everything's on the left side. And he's like, let me walk you through why that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Because they're all on one side of her body and they don't correlate with like where she was found and how she was found.
Right.
So Steve's like, we have to exhume this body. And the only way we can do that is if the sheriff approves. And I'm like, oh God,
yeah.
Here comes the red tape. No, Joe's pretty cool.
Yeah. The thing about Joe, Sheriff Joe, he is pretty cool. And he like didn't know much about the case, but he's interested and he wants to help, but he's like, this is going to cost potentially tens of thousands of dollars to do this exhumation. And
I was hesitant to spend tens of thousands of dollars on something I wasn't sure was going to pay off.
I said, if I raised the money myself, would that help? I wasn't sure how I was going to do that, but I kind of threw it out there and that brought him around.
I got you. I'm going to raise the money myself.
She's the like, Bob Ruff of this case. She's
100.
Like, I can absolutely raise the money. How much do you need?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm definitely going to do it. And he's like, all right, well, money talks and like, they're going to make this happen.
She's like, fucking great. Again, I'm Sylvia. I don't know why everyone's acting like we just
exactly.
met.
Exactly. But what happens is they hold a press conference to sort of drum up local, like more local interest in the case. And Sylvia gets to be a part of the press conference. And she's like, I felt really included.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we wouldn't be here if not for you, Sylvia.
Exactly.
Don't let anyone make you feel otherwise. So they want eyes on this, right? That's all they want. And so Steve, Cold Case Steve, calls America's Most Wanted, and he wants us on the national stage. So then we meet this is like, I can't believe how it's like, and then, and everyone we meet is like, brings so much to the table.
Even America's Most Wanted was like, yes, girl, we're there. We'll do this.
Absolutely.
Also,
who at America's Most Wanted is like, no, not tragic enough.
I know.
The nerve.
I know.
So we meet Beth, and she's a medical investigator.
Can we stop for a second?
Yeah.
Because there's something witchy about Beth.
I love Beth.
There's something very spiritual. She's the medical examiner, right? So she works for the coroner's office. But she does this work. There's something spiritual behind her eyes.
She's very serene about the work she does.
Yes, and she takes it very personally and very seriously.
Yeah, and I'm saying that not like she doesn't care, but she like, I think she's, we say
it's
this.
It's the opposite.
We say this a lot. Like sometimes, you know, when we hear like, oh, that's so, like, why are you saying it in such a crass way? Or why are you saying it? Like sometimes people are just meant to be like in the job that they're in.
Yes.
And she cares so much, and she's a fucking badass.
Yes.
Because here's what happens.
It's anticipated that the exhumation would take about 2 hours. The coffin would be removed from the grave and then taken to a lab where the forensic anthropologist would take a look at Jane Doe. And that is not how it happened.
It was only supposed to take 2 hours. And what's wild is that we get to see it. This happens sometimes in documentaries where, like, an exhumation will happen. And usually, we'll start to see the beginning of it, and then it cuts away. We are here. We have footage of the whole thing, and we walk through this very slowly.
Because what happens is that, to their surprise, the coffin has disintegrated.
Because remember, it was 1953 that the body was buried.
So they only have skeletal remains.
Yeah.
And so Beth goes, well, now it's an archaeological excavation. Oh, my God!
I mean, it was really wild. And they show Beth. They put a ladder over the gravesite, and Beth is down there, like, literally with, like, archaeological tools, mm-hmm. like, dusting the dirt off of the remains, which they show us liberally the remains, which was a lot
for me. And, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
And she says it's painstaking work. Also, I don't know why this is Jillian Pensavalli, This Is Your Life, all of my, like, walk down memory lane. Did you or anyone listening have that little, like, archaeological kit? Because I wanted to be Indiana Jones when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it was just like a bunch of sand and dirt, but you
God.
Can, like, sit at the kitchen table and do it.
Oh, Daisy has one of those. She loves that.
Oh, my God. Yes. And, like, my little kid, Indiana Jones wannabe heart, was like, no, I want to be Beth. I should have wanted to be Beth when I was little. I didn't know Beth.
I'm so glad you failed and ended up with me.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm so glad that,
I was going to be a million things. Marine biologist,
really?
Archaeologist. Oh, I was going
to
be
to be a marine biologist. Do you know that I have an overwhelming, deeply ingrained fear of deep, deep water?
I do know that.
Like, I'm a very good swimmer, and I can swim in anything, but, like, if I ever am, like, scrolling TikTok, and there's, like, a video of the Titanic on the ocean floor, I have an immediate reaction to it.
Yeah.
It's, like, terrifying to me.
Okay, great.
So marine biologist was not meant to
be
for me.
It was just a cute thing to say.
A cute thing to say. I like animals.
Because it's fun. It's like, let's...
You know what Daisy wants to be when she grows up?
What?
A dog walker.
Cute.
And a dog groomer and a taxi driver and a podcaster. Because she, quote, wants to follow in my footsteps.
Doing one of those things.
I know.
Only one of those things is following. That's
very cute. She grooms Golden now. It's like she has a little grooming station.
She has to because he's got that curly hair. You got to keep that up or else it's going to be a mess.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
I know.
So... And this is painstaking work, and Beth and her team got the majority of the remains. This is huge.
And it took hours and hours and hours.
And so everything is cataloged and documented and photographed. Like, this is super, super, super organized.
We also get this moment with Sylvia that I really don't know how I feel about. So Sylvia is at the gravesite, and she's allowed. She's got free reign. She can do whatever she wants.
When I first looked into the grave, I didn't know what to expect. But there were tufts of hair, and I felt like I needed a connection. I'd been thinking about this woman for so many years, and I just reached down and touched a bit of her hair. And
so I reached down and touched a tuft of her hair, like, while she was still in the ground.
Yeah.
And she said, it may seem odd to other people, but for me, it was my way of connecting with her. And I was like, I'm going to go ahead and say odd, Sylvia. I don't know about that. Like, I don't know about reaching into a grave and touching a tuft of hair.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean... I just feel like this must have been so emotional.
Yeah.
And it must have been, like, such a long day for Beth and her team. I don't know. Like, I wonder if maybe Sylvia was like, maybe what if this is it? Like, what if nothing comes of it? I don't know. Maybe it was just a little.
It felt a little ghoulish to me.
Yeah.
I was a little bit like, I don't know. And I'm not taking anything away from Sylvia's journey. Like, she does amazing work here and whatever it takes. As long as you're allowed to. Like, is that respectful?
I was going to say, I wonder if she was like, Beth, is this cool?
Right. Yeah.
And if Beth was like, 2 seconds flat.
I know.
Don't take anything. And then we go organize the fuck out of these papers.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, cool. You know?
Yeah. There was definitely nothing, like, it wasn't like Sylvia was trying to make it about herself or anything, but it just, to me, I was like,
no.
I'm not touching
it. Oh my God, like,
those
awful people from the Cecil documentary who were like, that was not this.
No.
But here's something really, really important.
We were able to get DNA from the molars, so we had a full profile from that. If there's anybody still living, like a sibling that we could get DNA from, we could try to identify them that way.
This means that they can use it to track down a living relative.
Which, if you really think about that, it's like, what they can do is disprove that this is Jane Doe. Because it's like, if somebody comes forward and is like, that's my sister, they can disprove it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can't really use the DNA to find her unless they're going to do the genealogical thing and, like, do 23andMe or whatever.
Oh,
but,
I guess,
like,
so
what they're saying is that the DNA will help us be able to prove definitively another way. Like, if we find a sibling another way, we can prove
they can track it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, getting the DNA is great, but it only works if you find an actual relative.
It's someone to test it against.
Yeah.
So, Jane Doe, by the way, we take a quick detour, this whole case has its own display case in the sheriff's office in the lobby.
Yes.
Including a bust that they had put together, like, in the 90s, hoping someone would recognize her. I have to say, it is nowhere near the worst bust we've ever seen.
Absolutely.
We've seen really, really bad ones. And
I don't know why they do these, because this one gets it kind of close, but it's, and I guess we'll get there when we get there. It is helpful in, like, identifying her down the road, but it's like, it never works. They never really look enough like a person to, like,
it was the pre digital age.
Yeah, it was the pre-digital.
They had to do something real.
You're right.
We've seen awful ones.
I mean, really, like, what was, I can't even remember which one it was.
I don't know.
But
they're
like,
all bad.
So many bad
Except
ones.
They're always so bad that I'm like, this one wasn't so terrible.
I know. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So they're looking, this whole like team of women, and we will meet more of them.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't so bad because like there were a lot of women doing this work.
100%.
Just saying. So they were looking at missing women from 1954.
Yeah.
And so like then they're looking for a paper trail and then following that and like ruling people out as they go. So we meet Karen Nicholas, who's a volunteer researcher.
Oh my God. Tell them what she used to do, Jillian.
She used to have a business that, and I quote,
I used to have a business that researched and tracked deadbeat dads that didn't pay their child support. I just seemed to have a knack for finding people.
I just seem to have a knack for finding people. Yes, Karen.
Karen, because Karen is sitting at home watching America's Most Wanted.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, so she tracks down Sylvia.
But I just want to go back to the deadbeat dads for a second. I love that there is
a... I'm like, so you're a bounty hunter?
Oh my God. I mean, literally. Shitty dad bounty hunter. Like, put that on a business card.
There have to be so many of those.
I know.
Right?
Well, I'm glad to know. Like, I mean, like, the deadbeat dads getting out of child support.
Just
like,
have a knack for tracking
people
down.
How come she didn't find my dad?
It's like, right. It's like the most delicate way for her to say it.
Yeah,
I have
yeah.
a knack for finding people. No,
I love
track
her.
That son of a bitch down, Karen.
Track that son of a bitch down.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
But Cold Case Steve was right. He was like, we have to get eyes on this. It needs to be on America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
They realized, though, there are a lot of missing women because in the 40s and 50s and 60s, it was very easy to change your identity. And I'm like, yeah, Don Draper did it.
Not only was it easy to change your identity, all these women wanted the fuck out.
I know.
And wouldn't they?
Remember when Don was like, it'll shock you how much this never happened. He like to get Peggy to do it. He's like, it's really easy to change your identity.
Yeah.
I just did it.
But
it's
like,
awesome.
Like all these women that were just like, fuck this.
Yeah, they don't want to be found.
No, exactly. And it really was easy, as we will see.
Right. So it's August 2005. Let's talk about what they call the Catherine Dyer lead.
Yes.
And Catherine Dyer, she disappeared from Denver. She's the right age. She's the right weight.
Catherine's marriage license revealed that she was married to a man named Jimmy Dyer in Arizona who had died. He was married 3 or 4 times. And I found that one of his other wives lived in Denver at the time. So I managed to contact her and go visit her.
Amazing Sylvia tracks down one of his wives and ends up getting a photo of Catherine.
Yeah, which is kind of amazing that the new wife has the picture of the missing wife. Because remember, she's gone missing.
Yeah, I guess like photo albums from back then, everyone was taking like at least one picture of the wedding in front of the chapel.
Well, it's true. Like, I mean, when I was young, I grew up in the photo album era, and like that stopped in like the early 2000s or whatever. But like, I have like
they all went on to Facebook albums.
It's true. I mean, honestly, like, you go like right from photo albums to Facebook albums.
So funny.
It's true. And I just want to point out, Karen says that Catherine, the first wife who we're talking about here, just like vanished into thin air.
Yeah.
She just disappeared.
Yeah. So they do what they call a superimposition to combine Catherine's photo and the image of the facial reconstruction. And I'm like, usually a superimposition is like a major inconvenience. But not here. It's a good, I'm like, a superimposition? What the hell is that? Oh.
It's a superimposition.
Sylvia, you're teaching me something
every
day.
Yeah, I love it. But like, they superimpose Catherine's face over the facial reconstruction of the Jane Doe. And Sylvia's like, it matched so closely, I thought this has to be our Jane Doe. And I'm like, does it?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, all white women of a certain age are going to have similar, like, I don't know.
I guess. But they're just excited. It's like, it's something.
Anything.
It's something.
Yeah.
But someone asked Sylvia, do you think Harvey Glattman is the killer? And Sylvia's like, I don't know, maybe. Also, who is Harvey Glattman?
Who the fuck is Harvey Glattman?
So let's learn about
Harvey Glattman. Sounds like the nerdy, like, science teacher. You know what I mean?
Harvey Glattman.
Yeah, totally.
This guy's a fucking nightmare.
He's a nightmare.
He is one of the first identified serial killers,
yes.
And he's out in Southern California, or he was.
Yeah.
And so Rick Jackson, who's retired LAPD, who did homicide cases, he tells us about Harvey.
Harvey Glattman was born in the Bronx area of New York City. He seemed to be kind of a mama's boy. His mom always took care of him even after he started getting into trouble.
He was a mama's boy that his mom took care of him even... We got to give him like a minute's worth of airtime just to give a little background. I promise I'll go
fast. But the mom is like, are we blaming the mother or was this guy just like, what is this?
Is that, did I do that? Was I part of the problem there?
I
didn't mean to.
No, he said it, but I'm like, that's the only thing where I don't know.
Oh, they always blame the mother. I know. It's never the mother's fault.
Hey, sometimes moms suck. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Well, what they're saying, I think what they're trying to say is that he was like incapable of taking care of himself because his mother had to take care of him like even after he like became an adult.
Right.
You know?
So he's born in the Bronx and then moves to LA in 1957.
Yeah.
And just doing the creepiest thing ever because he was posing as a photographer for those Pulp Fiction magazines.
Which, like, if you don't, I didn't really know what these Pulp Fiction magazines were either, but then you see them and you're like, oh, right. Why did we do this thing in the 50s where it was, like, super hot to, like, have, like, comic books and just, like, regular books of women being, like, bound and whipped?
It's, like, really, it's, like, exploiting. It's really.
But they're like, bound and being whipped, but they're all, like, smiling.
Because it's, like, it's a whole thing.
It's very dark.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So he was posing as a photographer for these Pulp Fiction magazines, and that's how he would get these beautiful women in LA to meet with him. But they were always like, just like the other magazines, posed with bondage or in compromising positions.
He would say, we're doing a Pulp Fiction shoot. He'd get them alone. He would tie them up, take their pictures, rape them, and kill them.
Yeah. Like, and we like see some of the photos that he took. It's just fucking awful.
The first time that happens, how does it happen a second time?
I don't know.
Like the first time your client doesn't come back because she was raped and murdered.
Girl, it's like 1950 whatever. No one's giving a shit.
Really? Like a talent agent isn't like, Brenda didn't come back after that weird.
You think he's going through a talent agency?
That's what I was thinking.
No. He's like meeting these girls like, oh, did you just get off the bus from wherever? Like meeting them at the diner or meeting them
the
somewhere.
Five and dime.
Or whatever. Like really like starting conversation and knowing exactly like, of course she's here to make it big and saying like, don't you want me to take your picture?
The look of utter pity on your face when you understand a concept that I'm just not getting.
He's going through the agency?
That he's calling like William Morris.
No, girl. Like,
sorry.
He's a scammer.
Everyone who goes to Hollywood is just so vulnerable.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
I'm sure he's like, I'll give you pictures for your book. I'll help you get an agent. He was just lying to them.
They just want it so badly.
So three victims that we know are Judith Ann Dull, Shirley Bridgeford, and Ruth Rita Mercado. And they were all like young, beautiful actresses and or models. But we learned the story of Lorraine Vigil.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Yeah. And she
Lorraine Vigilante.
Yeah. 100%. <You know? laughs> So
tell them the story of Lorraine Vigilante.
Vigilante. She's on her vigilante shit again. So she's driving. They're like driving to his fake studio.
Yeah.
At some point he pulled off the road. He displayed a gun and she fought. She wasn't going to get tied up. And fortunately for her, a California Highway Patrol officer was driving on this road and saw this struggle going on outside of the car. And that led to Glatman's arrest.
And this patrol officer drives by.
But they like a fight ensues,
right?
Like outside the car.
Because she's probably probably caused a scene.
Yeah.
I'm saying that in the best way possible.
So like they're fighting outside the car. The policeman rescues her and arrests Glatman.
Yeah.
So Glatman goes to prison. And like, and we're back with Sylvia now, who's sort of giving us this history. And she like, after the arrest in LA, she's now like researching his life before that. And so she finds out he lived in Denver. So he's born in New York. His family moved to Denver when he was a teenager in 1945, and it was from there that he moved to LA. And he was up to fucking no good in Colorado either, because his first arrest was in Boulder. So he literally kidnapped a woman off the street, made her walk into the mountains where he, quote, molested her, and then he, quote, tied her up and kept her for the night.
Ugh.
He didn't kill her.
No.
And I guess she, like, lived to tell the tale, and that's how he got arrested for his first arrest in Boulder.
And so, but what this proves is that this guy lived in Denver with his parents from 1951 to 57.
Which, remember, Jane Doe's body was found in 53,
right.
So it puts him in the vicinity and makes him a good candidate to be her killer, because the MO was also the same.
Right.
Like, you took her to a secluded area, naked, and found dead.
And it's confirmed that Jane Doe had ligature marks on her,
yes.
So, like, it's looking like she's the victim of this guy.
Right.
And then, out of the clear blue sky, because Sylvia and our friends have been on this Jane Doe message board, like, updating everyone on the case.
Yeah.
So, out of nowhere, these two ladies in Australia who are on this Jane Doe message board email them and say, look,
they've been taking care of this lady, Barbara, and now she was getting ready to go to a nursing home. And they had found stuff in her bedroom when they were cleaning it out. They found divorce papers for Catherine Dyer. and a James Dyer.
We found divorce papers for a Catherine and James Dyer.
So remember, they are pretty sure that Jane Doe from Boulder is this Catherine Dyer person. These women from Australia are writing to be like, no, girl. Catherine Dyer is alive and well and living in Queensland, Australia, and we're taking care of her.
And her name is Barbara now.
Right. And all of our heads are exploding. Like, what?
Right. Like, they had no idea that these women, it's crazy.
Yeah. So we go to Queensland, Australia. These two women have been taking care of Barbara. She was getting ready to move into a nursing home, and that's when they were, like, cleaning out her room, and they found these divorce papers for her and James.
Yeah. So here's the story. They got married.
James and Catherine
get married.
Yeah.
Catherine, like, skipped out on the divorce.
Yeah.
They were going to get divorced. She skipped out on it. She moved to Hawaii. Then she takes a ship to Australia, and someone goes, she gets off the boat, and poof, now she's Barbara.
So,
see,
like,
how easy it is?
What's wild about this is that, like, she skipped out on the divorce, and I guess, like, didn't have any other family that was going to miss her. Like, we don't
that
really...
That guy must have been a piece of shit if she just ran.
And he had, like, five wives. Like James Dyer sucks. Somebody prove me wrong.
Right?
Somebody, like, his great nephew, like, email me and tell me how great he was, but he must have sucked. But, like, she hightails it away and no one's ever looked for her ever again.
Well, I'm not saying, maybe they did, but, like, how are they supposed to in 1950, whatever?
Or,
it's
like,
hard
what
to
was
do.
It? But I'm just saying it's so wild that Catherine, like, needed to get away so badly that she went away and never, like, this is what they say about why people can't ever really go missing forever, because it's impossible not to contact your, like, loved ones or whatever. No, it happened.
But
she did it.
And they said earlier, like, in this time period, women especially were doing this all the time,
yes,
and they never looked back.
Right, because they're, like, their lives were so shitty because of their circumstances or whatever. But this is also why when they're, like, superimposing, like, Catherine's picture over the clay bust, and, like, I knew at the time that, like, this isn't going to end up being the woman. I'm like, they all look the same.
I know.
All clay busts look like somebody.
I know. Now, this story is incredible, but it's not what our heroes want to hear.
Exactly.
It's actually the last thing they want to hear,
yes,
because now they're back at square one. So it's September 9th, 2008.
Following the disinterment, there were a lot of studies that were done, the DNA, facial reconstruction, and so forth. But unfortunately, one lead after another dissolved, and we did want to return the remains to the cemetery.
They're like, we still haven't found her identity, but it's, like, time to put her back in the earth.
Yeah, and all the leads are falling apart.
Yeah.
Like, they don't really... No, they're feeling really emotional and they're feeling kind of lost, and they want to keep moving, but they don't know what to do. And once again, like, bing, they get an email.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One night, Sylvia says, just before she was about to go to sleep, she gets an email from a young woman in Wisconsin. The email says, I think my great aunt may be Jane Doe.
Get in the car, everyone.
We're going to Madison, Wisconsin.
Let's go. So this woman's name, she's here with us today. Her name is Michelle Casper, and she's awesome.
Obsessed with Michelle. Is that okay
she's
with everybody?
The best.
Yeah. Michelle, you want a podcast? Like, yeah. It seems like you'd be great at it.
So her great aunt, Deanie.
Yes.
Michelle basically, like, lived with her as a child.
Yeah. And so, like, her great aunt is her grandmother's sister. And so we don't know how she ended up with her, but, like, that was her, like, mother figure growing up.
And Michelle finds this photo album with all these, like, fantastic
when she was
old
12.
Photos. Like,
yeah.
These photos are so amazing. And Michelle's like, they're looking fabulous as teenagers.
So it's Deanie and then her grandmother and the oldest sister, whose name is Dorothy. And the three of them are all sisters.
Yeah. So Dorothy Gay is Aunt Deanie's oldest sister.
Gay. You could not make a gayer name.
I know. It's
That's
best.
The gayest name.
So she's Aunt Deanie's oldest sister, and she went by Dot. Hey, everyone. She went missing.
Yes.
She went missing. This is the big thing. So the sisters grew up on a farm in Arizona.
There were a lot of stories of Dot being the boss of the show. Deanie had mentioned that Dot was the most rebellious of the three. She was pretty notorious for running away. Years later, Dot lied about her age to get married. That marriage was annulled.
She'd, like, run away all the time. She lied about her age to get married.
And then the marriage was eventually annulled.
Yeah.
But, like, she was notorious for running away,
yes,
which will play into things later.
Yes.
But she went missing in 1953. She would have been almost 18 years old.
Yeah, and Deanie, her sister, thought that, like, she had just run away, that she'd gotten married. She wanted to give herself a more fabulous life. They say she wanted, like, more money, more opportunities than she could have, like, just growing up on the farm.
And she was really vocal about that. It was all she talked about.
Yeah.
So she's described as, like, a strong-willed, determined woman. So they're like, okay, she probably went and set out to do the things she said she was going to do.
But it is also just like, I guess you just accept that she never contacted her sisters who she loved and was really close with.
They did, yeah.
They never, ever assumed that she died.
No.
And that's what's wild is that, like, I know times were different. Like, we're talking generations ago. And I guess, like, before emails and computers and text messaging, like, maybe family members just fell out of touch.
And she also was telling everyone that's what she was going to do.
But they also, like, never really looked for her, which, again, I'm not putting any shade on the family, but it's just kind of, like, assumptions were made that, like, she was off living this happy life and didn't really want to be bothered, and they just kind of, like, let it be.
Yeah, well, what resources did they have in 1954?
Honestly.
Know?
So Michelle, who was the one who sent the email, says, like, you know, at the time that I started looking into whatever happened to my great aunt Dorothy, she was also young and rebelling and feeling like her and Dot had a lot in common and they would have gotten along really well. And she's like, I had very little googling experience. Yeah. I didn't really know how to, like, look into shit. So she's like, when she decided to start looking into whatever happened to Dorothy Gay, she was like, I just kind of would Google her name and, like, different variations of her name and find other people who had that name and then just, like, call them up and be like, hi, are you my missing great aunt?
Yeah.
And they'd be like, no, super gay name, but no,
sorry,
not me.
But one day, a friend of hers is like, you should go to the Doe Network, this Jane Doe Network. And she comes across Jane Doe number UFC333.
It's the clay bust.
Yeah, found in Boulder in 1954. The description matched her great aunt Dot. The height was right. The weight was right.
The Doe Network also listed that this Jane Doe had a scar from an appendectomy. I reached out to my great aunt Deanie and asked her if she knew if Dot had had any surgeries. Deanie said yes, and that she remembered very clearly that Dot had had her appendix removed.
Also, the appendectomy scar, remember that?
Yes.
Dot had her appendix removed.
Yes.
So all of these things are falling into place. And Michelle is like, holy shit, I think this is my great aunt. So she emails Sylvia and here we are.
I want to say that I'm going to go ahead and go fuck myself because the clay bust is the picture that she sees on the Doe Network. Mm-hmm. And it's that picture that makes her stop and go like, wait a second.
Yep.
That, like, the clay bust itself does look enough like her aunt Dot that then she looks at the date, then she sees the appendectomy scar.
Yeah, all these things are just like falling into
so
place.
Like, I will go fuck myself and say that, like, sometimes the clay bust really does work out.
Okay, great. Have fun.
Thank you. See you later. Bye.
So they get all the DNA together, right? And then they wait. And it's this, like, roller coaster of emotions, because especially Sylvia, like, they were, like, and her team, they were so nervous because they'd been close before and they don't want to get their hopes up. And then these weeks go by.
But remember, the way the DNA works is, like, they can't really, they're not putting it into a database to see if any, like, if they can find it. They're really waiting to use Jane Doe's DNA that they have to compare against another sample.
Right.
They've been waiting for somebody to come to them, and it's happened.
And it's happened. Yeah. And so, like, weeks go by and everyone's, like, on pins and needles and they don't know what to do and they don't know what to expect. And the results come back and everyone, it's her.
I know.
And, like, I was literally crying. It's her. Yeah. And her name is Dorothy Gay Howard. She's from Arizona.
Yep.
It took them from 1996 to 2009, but they fucking did it.
Yeah.
They found her.
And it's like, it's so amazing to give her a name and to know her story. But, like, Michelle, the great niece who, like, started this whole thing for them, she's saying, like, it was also really hard. Like, when I began the journey of looking for my aunt, my great aunt, like, it didn't occur to me that, like, if we were to find out that something really bad happened to her, like, what would happen?
Yeah.
My great aunt was grieving and perhaps feeling some guilt that for decades she had thought her sister had run away. And now she's learning that her sister wasn't coming home, not because she didn't want to be a part of the family, but instead she had been brutally murdered.
Nobody really considered that she'd been brutally fucking murdered.
Right. And then, like, the guilt of realizing that she suffered this horrible death and, you know, that everyone just thought she ran away to start this new life, which is what she was always saying she'd do.
And we learn about her at the time, you know, Steve, the cop, is saying, like, we learned that she was 19 years old. She was at the end of her second marriage. She had a great aunt named Ola May who lived in Denver, and they find Ola May's address because they presume that Dorothy went to, like, live with great aunt in Denver. The great aunt lived 3.1 miles from the killer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, once again, putting them in the same neighborhood at the same time.
Right. And now Steve, the cop, gets in touch with the cops who were working on the killer's case in California.
Yeah.
And he gets a transcript of conversations they had.
From, like, the 1950s.
This is really important.
Yeah.
So the LAPD asks him specifically about the women in Denver in the 1950s. And they ask him,
because remember, there was, like, the one that he got arrested for that he just, like, kidnapped off the street and walked her up into the mountains and kept her for the night.
Right. And so they ask him, are these women still alive? And the killer says, yeah, well, you know, unless they've been run over. And this is like a record scratch moment because remember the theory that Steve the cop had that Dorothy, now she's not a Jane Doe anymore, Dorothy was hit by a car because all of her injuries were on the left side of her body?
Yes.
That ties into, why would you say that?
Right.
Why would you even mention being
because
hit by a car?
We know that one victim that he got arrested for did live. Like, she did live, right? So, like, Dorothy, we now know he's thinking about Dorothy.
Yes.
You know? And so Steve measures the injuries on Dorothy's, like, on Dorothy's body, and he learns what car the killer was driving at the time, Glattman. It was a 1952 Dodge Coronet.
Clubman Coupe?
I don't know what any of those words mean. But he finds a perfectly restored one of these cars.
And I found one fully restored in an establishment in New York. And he sent me the measurements the next day. Every single one of those measurements corresponded with the injuries Dot had on her left side.
Every single one of the measurements corresponds with the injuries Dorothy had on her left side.
Yeah. So because of all of that, here's what Steve the cop theorizes, based on what he knows about what the killer has done in the past and all of this evidence and the science, that the killer had tied up Dorothy, takes the long ride up to the creek, unties her, tells her to get undressed, which is exactly what he did with the other victim that we know.
Yeah.
But however, Dot runs.
She does get undressed. The theory is that she gets undressed, but then runs from the car. Yeah.
But she's running downhill.
Yes.
And so then what Steve the cop thinks happened is that the killer gets in his car, chases her, ends up hitting her with his car, and that's how she ends up in the creek with no clothes and pins in her hair.
Right.
And these injuries. Now, we'll never be 100% sure.
Yeah.
But to me,
it feels like the most safe bet. Of course.
That's what happened.
Of course.
But still, like, okay, but there's still no closure for Dot's family.
And they're not even sure that they think that's what happened. Michelle is like, to me, like, I still haven't been given definitive proof of anything.
Yeah.
And so to me, like, we have no closure and we're still wondering what happened to her.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very hard for Michelle and the rest of Dot's family. But in May 2010,
my family learned just how much Boulder had loved and cared for her. My great aunt Deanie made the decision that she wanted Dorothy to remain in Boulder.
Dot's family decides that they want her remains to stay in Boulder because the community of Boulder really showed up for her.
Yeah.
Which, and cared about her and cared for her, which I think is so beautiful.
And really, and the people like Sylvia who worked so much on this case were like, she was so happy. They feel so close to her.
Yeah.
And they were so happy to have the family leave the remains there because Boulder really did take care of her. They identified her. They gave her name back, just like they were saying at the beginning.
Absolutely. And the killer was executed in September of 1959. And the unsolved murder case of Dorothy Gay Howard remains officially open, even though
we know it most likely happened,
but still, like, there's that little piece. You just
God
want it official.
It.
I just want to make it official.
I want it to. Oh, girl, we did Web of Death.
Yeah. So it's called the Boulder Jane Doe, but it's the murder of Dorothy Gay Howard.
Fam, join us on the Patreon. Over 400 full ad-free bonus episodes. We are working on Jinx 2 right now. We did Quiet on Set. We did
Love Has Won.
Oh, what was the Cult of Mother God?
Yep.
We've done a bunch of cults over there.
We did the Twin Flames Madness.
Yeah, we did Lula Rich back in the day.
Yeah.
Remember that?
It definitely counts as a cult.
It definitely counts as a cult. We did, what was the one? Oh, the one where they left the money on the mattress and they went off to the spaceship.
Oh, Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate, we did.
Yeah.
Wild. And like the Staircase and the Jinx and the Lacey Peterson one and the Jodi Arias. Like everything is over there. There's also a tier where you get ad-free bonus episodes. There's a tier where we send you stuff, like the Clack fans.
The Clack fans.
We're only
for Pride.
A couple months away from the calendar that we send out every year at Christmas.
That's right.
We're already talking about Christmas, girl.
I can't believe it.
It's
halfway.
Wild. Halfway
already. Oh my God.
Halfway to Christmas.
1,000 degrees.
What are we doing next?
All right, so this is our bonus episode this week. So tomorrow, which is Friday, on Patreon, the next Jinx episode is episode 3.
Oh,
so that's coming up.
Doozy.
Oh boy.
I know.
Then Tuesday, on the regular feed, you get Brandy Helville and the Cult of Fast Fashion.
Oh my goodness.
And then we'll see you in like a week for another bonus episode.
Oh my goodness.
We can't stay away.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, we love you. Thanks so much for hanging out. I hope you're enjoying these bonus episodes. We love making them for you.
We do love it, and we love you, fam. Thank you so much.
We love you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
There are these text messages between the senior leadership of Brandy Melville, the most vile, sexual, racist jokes possible.
When I saw him wearing a Hitler outfit, I wasn't surprised.
Store style photos were taken every day. Go stand against that wall and pose. So
I can text it to the founder of the company.
Rainy Melville was part of fast fashion and how fast fashion was impacting our environment.
Everywhere you walk, this fabric.
It's gonna shock you. What you see entering our taste, I need to be worried.
We're all being exploited by the same system.
Fast fashion brands convince you to buy so much because they convince you that you are not enough.
Rainy Melville taps into the worst impulses of being a teenage girl.
Finally, someone's talking about it.
I bet Boulder's got the best thrift stores.
They might. You know, I don't know anything about it.
It seems like a slightly fancy town.
I love a good, like, thrift store, antique store.
Oh, sure.
My fave.
Oh, yeah.
The way they put the cheese on, it wasn't just
we're
like...
We're still doing this.
Yeah, we're still doing it.
We're here. We're not going anywhere.
Because it was the sauce that came with it.
Of course.
It was like a white... It wasn't rant. Oh, God. Things are breaking.
Something... I thought there was an animal in it. My phone just fell out of my pocket, and I thought there was an animal. I thought
it
was
being... Hey,
Golden Girl.
Oh, Golden.
I got new shoes like every 2 years.
Okay.
Because my dad did not pay child support.
Oh. I was like, I've had these sneaks for like four.
Just talking about mine. Now I really wish there had been a Karen in my life. My dad had the money.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
What a piece of shit.
What a piece of shit. You have it and you don't use it.
I know. He had the money just like to get back
my
mom.
My mom's dad was like that. Just never paid anything. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
He's dead now.
Yeah, they're dead now.
Bye.
So, bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.